This is Annie Pontrelli interviewing Mrs. Emma Lamason on July 17th, 1991. Hello.
Hello.
And Emma, why don't you just give some background information and tell me the years you were here and
Well, I was born and raised in a small town in central Montana near Great Falls called San Coulee, and I was the first girl to come to the university from that little mining town. I entered the university in September of 1929 and graduated in June of 1933. So you can imagine how I felt coming from such a small town to a place like Missoula, Montana. I attended the four academic years. I majored in mathematics and minored in chemistry and foreign languages. Mm. Had a wonderful experience. I was here during the so-called Depression years. We were all quite poor, and we enjoyed our lives together. It seemed that we didn't require a lot of entertaining. None of us had cars. We were very much confined to the campus. I lived in what is now Brantley Hall all 4 years. They attended the university, and Mrs. Brantley was the house mother during those years, and she did a lot for me. She's one that, in fact, she did a lot for all of the girls. She taught us some of the social graces and some of our manners. She was a wonderful lady. And the senior year, I was so-called student assistant in the dormitory. We have assistants now on every floor, I understand. We only had one at the time. And my job was to go around every night with a flashlight and check all the girls in. In other words, bed check every night. During the week, they had to be in bed by 11 o'clock, and on the weekends by, I've forgotten, I think it was 12:30 or 12:45. That was one of the most interesting jobs I ever had in my life. That's when I got close to the girls who were here, and I still remember many of them, and some still keep in touch with me.
Were there many times when you found people not in their beds?
No, not too many. And in those days, I'm sure there wasn't the percentage of consumption of alcohol that there is today. But I have a vivid memory of one night when one of the girls came in with too much alcohol. Her sorority sisters were helping her on either side. And I met them in the corridor, and they just looked at me, and I said nothing. And I said, "You're going to bed right away, I hope." And they said yes, and they said thank you, and I did not. Well, I made some very close friends in the dormitory among my own classmates, as well as the younger people. We had sororities and fraternities then, just as we do now, but I did not belong to a sorority. We had an independent organization, and I was active in that. We had quite a few who belonged to that organization, and we had our own social functions, just like the sororities and fraternities had at the time. And there were some very fine people there. So many of us couldn't afford the sorority dues and expenses, and I, for one, couldn't. And so I had to go through college without joining one, but I was just as happy when I finished. And I was very active in many activities in school and in the mathematics department, in the foreign language department. I just now found a card that was sent to me by the French professor who had gone to France for a month, and she wrote me a cute little card in French telling me that she missed us all and she was anxious to get back. Mrs. Arnoldson, she was classic. I have some very fine teachers whom I still remember. Dr. Lennis, the chairman of the math department and my math professor, hired me 4 years after I graduated from here to come back and work for him. I worked for him as his secretary. I did all of his work on his books. He wrote map books. And I did the work on map books, such as the typing, the editing, sending to the publishers, compiling all the answer books and teachers' keys. And then I taught a course every quarter. So when I came back here in 1937, for 2 years, I taught one math course every quarter. And then one quarter I taught his full load while he went away to University of Chicago to do some work. But I was paid as a secretary $175 a month.
Oh. Things have changed.
Things have changed. Yes, they have. And for the better, but we didn't know any differently then. We were all paid such low salaries. When people hear about that, they think, how could you manage? Well, the first year I came back here, I rented a room in his home, which is now the president's house. Mm. And I rented a room upstairs, and then my office was right next door to that room. And I would get up in the morning and just go. I didn't eat breakfast during that time, and I would just go into my office and work. And I didn't talk to anybody all day except my boss. And there was no such thing as a coffee break in those days. So I would sit at that typewriter or the desk until 12 o'clock, go out and have lunch and come back and work. And I remember one day Dr. Lennis would stay up late at night to write these math books. And one day Mrs. Lennis came to me and said, Emma, do you think you could slow down a little? And I said, why? She said, you're going to kill my husband off. She said, he's working hard to keep ahead of you. You're working hard to catch up with him, and you two are just going around in circles. So she said, will you please not finish all the work he puts on your desk in the morning so that he won't work so hard that night and get some sleep?
Oh.
Well, I had some.
So did you?
Yes, but I didn't know how to slow down. I was taught that when I was hired by a boss as a secretary, that I was there to do all of his work as efficiently and as quickly as I could. So I did. But during my college years, I had to work. The last year I was in school, I worked three different jobs because I couldn't get any money from home. We were very, very poor. And the student assistant's job in the dormitory paid me my board and room. And then I had a scholarship that paid part of my fees. The fees, the first quarter I came to school, were $35 a quarter. But we worked for 25 cents an hour. So whenever I earned a dollar, I thought I earned a lot. And we were all in that same situation. There were a few who had enough money to go to school, but all of my friends were in similar circumstances as mine, working for 25 cents an hour and trying to make ends meet. Now, do you have some questions you want to ask me?
Well, actually, we can look at this form. You'd mentioned the years that you were here.
Okay.
At least as a student.
Yes. The university president was President Clapp. So I have worked at this university during all those years from President Clapp to the present. I was away from here just 4 years, from 1933 when I graduated, and I came back in 1937. And at that time, President Simmons was here. And Dr. Lennis and several others did not approve of President Simmons. So it was during that first year that I came back that Dr. Lennis was busy compiling information to submit to some committee to relieve President Simmons of his job.
What was the problem?
I didn't understand that because I wasn't here the year that he was hired. And I thought he was a very personable gentleman and a very intelligent man, but evidently, his philosophy was not the same as that of some of the others. And this has happened through the years when presidents just stay here for 4, 5, 6 years and then leave. There are pressures on campus to have them leave. And that was what was going on when I came back to work in 1937. President Platt had died after I left, but he was the man who was president. Okay, what did I study? I said it already, mathematics. And I taught in the math department those years. And then there were very few buildings on campus when I was here, but they seemed adequate. We had separate dormitories for men and women then, and Brantley Hall was called North Hall, and Elrod Hall was called South Hall, and then there was a Corbin Hall in between. And since I have been here for so many years, until I retired in 77, and then I've been working as a volunteer advisor ever since. I am now retiring for the last time. And so the changes that have occurred on this campus are monumental. The increase in enrollment created the need for all of these new buildings, new programs, an increase in staff and faculty. So I suppose I have seen as many changes as most anyone who is still around in my age bracket. There are still some who were here before I was who are here, and they will have seen as many changes as I have, and probably even a little bit more, because I don't think any building was going on when I went to school those 4 years.
It sounded like it was during the John's tenure. There were a lot of buildings.
McFarland.
It was during McFarland?
McFarland's, uh-huh, 1950s. McFarland was in McFarland here. That's when the field house, the liberal arts building, and...
I guess I was thinking of the two high-rise dorms. I think those were built during...
Were they built during President John's? I have not kept up with the dates of those buildings. I know that during McFarland's presidency, that I think there were 4 or 5 buildings built. I was working there. The university has been my life, as you can imagine. Coming here as a student and then back here to work, and work here until I'm almost 80 years old. So most of my life has been spent here. I have a soft spot in my heart for this institution. And I have watched it grow, and I have enjoyed all the years that I've worked here because I enjoy the contacts with the students. And we're here for the students, of course. Mm-hmm. And as far as teachers are concerned, I had some favorites. It's hard to tell about them. Dr. Lennis, who was later my boss, Dr. Merrill in the mathematics department, Dr. Schallenberger. I did not take any courses from him, but got to know him well through mathematics organizations that I belonged to, and then in later years. And Burley Miller, of course, after whom Miller Hall is named. And Dr. Severy, I didn't take any courses from him either in the botany department, but I got to know those men very well afterwards when I came back to work here in 1937. Because I worked in the mathematics department then. And as far as my own instructors are concerned, there was one whose name I don't remember who made me very unhappy because I was taking a history course, which I didn't care about, but I was determined I was going to get an A in the course anyway. And so I worked very hard, and it was the one and only time that I stayed up and studied half the night like most of the students did, for finals. I never did that. But that night I decided I would because I wanted the A in the course. I was the top student in the class, but I knew that I had to study hard to keep that because I didn't know what I would do in the final. When I got my grades, he gave me a B. It was the first and only time that I ever went to complain about a grade to an instructor. I never did. I was a very shy, bashful person. So when I went to see him, his reply to me was, I have two sections of that class. I combined them all, and a young man in my other section got a higher grade than you did in the final, so he got the A. That incident has never left me. I was very unhappy. So from that day forward, I didn't study hard for history anymore. Oh, that was yours. I could be the top person in the class, but I'm not going to. So I didn't go.
Oh, it's amazing how that stayed with someone.
Isn't it though? Because I was a determined person, because I wanted to excel and I worked hard. I was very shy and very quiet, and I worked hard at everything I did. And I just wanted to see if I could get an A in history because I didn't care for history, but I studied it. That was not my favorite class. I was involved in, I was not athletically involved or musically involved at all. I was just involved in organizations such as mathematics clubs and honoraries and foreign language clubs. And then in the independent organization, I was active in all of that stuff. I was very busy my senior year. I held offices in different organizations and enjoyed every bit of it. I was the director of the manager of the all-school, I don't know what they call it. It was called Hijinks. So I was a manager of that, and all fraternities and sororities presented little programs and skits at the Wilma Theater. It was a big thing that was held once a year. So during my senior year, I was manager of that thing. So it was fun. I enjoyed everything I did. I'm sure that there are honoraries still on campus for the various departments. I know that there are history and mathematics and all of those because I've kept up with some of those in mathematics. And those were the types of things that I was involved in.
Now, let's back up for just a minute. After you finished your years with Dr. Lennis?
Mm-hmm.
What happened then after that?
The war years came, and I had very interesting work here during the war years. I finally gave up with Dr. Lennis because, I got married then in 1939 in December. And I was working very long hours for him because I thought I should do those things, you know. And then my husband thought I was working too hard, and he thought that maybe I should quit. Well, I didn't want to, but it was very difficult to put in those long hours and work as hard as I was doing. So I did quit, but 1 month later, I was approached by Dr. Merrill and Dr. Schomburger and asked me if I would come to teach. We were beginning to have programs where we taught boys who were going into the service. And so I was hired to teach some mathematics classes in the evening, and then civil air regulations and navigation for the pilots. And I had never been in an airplane in my life, and I had to teach navigation.
How did you learn it?
I learned it by studying, because the classes were held at night, so I would spend the day. They gave me books and I would spend the day because they told me that I could teach it because of my mathematical background. In the meantime, I earned my master's degree while I was working for that business. I took late afternoon classes and got my master's degree. And so they told me that I could handle that because of my mathematical background. So they gave me all the material I needed, and then I would study during the day and teach an hour every night. And I had to be certified by the federal government too. I had to pass my own examination to be certified to teach those boys. And I did that for a couple of years, the evening courses. And I heard from a man, I haven't met him yet, whom I taught during those days, who was back here in Missouri. Then, after that, we had a program where 100 young men came in every month, and we would train them for 3 to 5 months, and each month we would be rotating them. After the first 3 months, then at the beginning of every month we'd get 100, at the end of the month 100 would leave. Then we had regular classes, and we scheduled them during the daytime hours, and they had regular periods for mathematics, chemistry, physics, geology, English, those regular courses. And those were the war years when our boys, after 1942, left the campus and went into the service. So we had this program then on campus, and the dormitories were all filled with the young men who were being trained by us and then sent on to pilot training schools. And some of them would come back sometime, and I'd ask one in particular, I said, did that work that I taught you in navigation help you when you went to the other school to continue your navigation studies? He said, very definitely. He said, it gave us a basic background. And he said, even what you taught, even though I didn't know a thing about flying. And the inspector would come very regularly, a federal inspector would come and sit in my class. And then at the end of the hour, I would say to him, did I do it right? And he said, yes. Then he found out that I had never been in an airplane, and I was trying to teach him how to navigate up in the air. So he said, we'll have to do something about that. So then we arranged to have me go in the airplane and practice what I was preaching. And the man who took me up there told me all about the controls, and then he reviewed what I was teaching the boys down on the ground, and he made me navigate the airplane up there in the air and follow what I did. And then it was much easier afterwards. And then my class was down below to watch me do all of this. They wanted to see how I could take it. And so he had me in an open pit airplane, a two-seater. I was behind him and he was in front. And I was equipped with two parachutes. And I had a flight suit. And somebody took a picture of me, but you never would know who it was. I never could see. And as I was stepping into it, and then he said, if you want to come down, and if this is bothering you, just tap your head like this, and he watched me through his mirror. He said, I'll take you down. It was one of the training planes that the boys were learning. So I was determined that I was not going to go down, because if I was going to teach them what to do, I wasn't going to be sick either. And we went through the slow rolls and through these things like this and like that. And it was a very cloudy day and a little bit of snow on the ground. So I didn't know whether I was upside down or right side up, because it was white up above and white down below. And he kept me up there for the whole time that he kept the students. And then when I got down, the boys were all there, and they said to him, did she pat her head? He said, no, she didn't. And they said, are you sick? I said, no, I'm not. And so I had to go in and eat cherry pie and drink a cup of coffee to prove that I wasn't sick.
Did you feel sick after that?
About an hour or two later after I got home, when I got on the ground, because I'm not a coffee drinker, so the coffee didn't help me any. and but I did it. And then the next day, my class was a lot, I mean, I felt so much better about being there because I saw what I was teaching them from up in the air, so it was a lot easier. But I did that, and then I, when we had this large group of boys on the campus, Dr. Merrill ran the whole program, and I was his assistant, but I was allowed to teach one math class. And we gave them all tests as they came, and we sorted them or divided them into groups according to test scores, and I selected the ones with the highest test scores because I knew it would be a little easier job because some of them had better backgrounds than the others. And so I taught an 8 o'clock class in that every morning. And the son of one of those men is here in Missoula and has been my friend since. Mm-hmm. It was a wonderful experience. And I did that until 1945. And then, you know, some of the veterans were starting to come back and this program was ending. And the registrar called me into the office and the president, and they asked me if I would come back and be a veterans advisor, because veterans were coming back. So I agreed to do that, and they sent me to a training program in Bozeman. Somebody from the Veterans Administration came to tell us about the young men coming back from the war, that they needed help in adjusting to different lives. They were coming back under the GI Bill. That's when the GI Bill started. And so I learned about the GI Bill, and it was at that time that they got a new registrar, who was Leo Smith, and Leo was at that training session as well. And then the president called me in after a few months of this and said, would you like to be the assistant registrar? We have hired Leo Smith, and he met you in Bozeman, and he would like to have you be his assistant. And I had not planned on going back to work full time, but everything sounded so interesting and exciting, so I agreed. So in 1946, I became the assistant registrar, and I continued as the veterans advisor during all of those years. And that first year in 1946, when I was assistant registrar and veterans advisor, our enrollment increased by 2,000 veterans all at once. And there was paperwork to be done for every one of them. That was all a challenge. I had to fill out a form for every single person here and sign it and see to it that the forms got to Fort Harrison right away so that they would get their monthly pay. They were paid a certain amount of money each month under the GI Bill. So I had a very, very busy schedule. I had no time to fool around. And I enjoyed these young men very much. They came back here with a purpose in mind. They all came back to get an education. And it was wonderful having them all on campus. The instructors liked them, and so did everyone else who had to work with them. And I got to know quite a few of them then, because prior to the time they came to school, when I was veterans advisor that year before becoming assistant registrar, the mail would be given to me coming from veterans. And I had two girls who helped. We would reply to all of these letters, and we had personal letters to every one of them. And many came back to tell us that the reason they chose this school was because they felt that we cared. They had personal letters from us. I'll tell you a little incident about one of the young men who kept writing back and forth. And when he arrived on campus, he came to the office to meet me. Then he left, and then he came back with a great big box of chocolates. And he said, "Do you know why I came back to see you?" I said, "No." He said, "I wanted to see what you looked like." He said, "I had visions of an assistant registrar being a short, dumpy person with very, very plain-looking person. And he said, and I was pleased with what I saw. So he said, I decided you deserve a box of chocolates. There are lots of little incidences like that in my lifetime that made everything worthwhile. Everything. It was really interesting. And one of them, Judd Moore, is still here in Missoula. He is retired from the Forest Service. And he was from the Sound. He used to write the most beautiful letters. And one letter came to me, and these were all letters regarding university courses and all of that sort of thing. And I saw to it that he had a personal reply. And one of the letters he wrote, he said, this is Robert E. Lee's birthday, but you up north wouldn't even know who Robert E. Lee is. He wrote me the cutest letters just like that. Mm-hmm. And he became a journalist and graduated from here. Now, oh, there were lots of little incidences like that that really meant a lot to me. It just got to be such pressure that I went to the hospital to visit one of the students who had been there for a while, and I fainted at the foot of his bed in the hospital. And it was just a collapse from overwork. And I came home, and I could hardly stand up. I was so weak, and I had to stay off work for about a month until I got my strength back. It was, and then I finally got on my feet again, kept right on going, and went on until I retired. I worked here for 40 years. I started in 37 and retired in 77. And then I started in volunteering as an advisor after that. I was working on a regular basis for a while, and then each year as I got older, I cut down the number of hours. And these last 2 years, I only worked during the registration periods and advanced registration periods. And now I'm not doing it anymore. Let's see what else.
Some of these aren't applicable. They're specifically for
Yes. Others who did.
Teaching. Although you did do some teaching.
Yes, I taught some. Those about 4 years.
Maybe you can comment on the question, what was it like to work under the different administrations, and give a little insight as to what the different presidents were like.
I didn't get to know too many of them too well. President McFarland was a wonderful person. His secretary became my best friend. So I got to know about him in a different manner from others. He was a very reserved person, and I think he was misunderstood by some. He had the interest of the university at heart, wanted to do everything that was best for the university, but you will hear from some people that he was very difficult to work with because he was not gregarious, and neither did he socialize a lot with faculty. And I think that's why I feel that he was misunderstood, because I knew how capable he was. But being in the registrar's office, we were not disturbed by presidents, really. So I didn't get to know them very well. I knew about him more than most. I've forgotten the order in which these men came. I did look it up the other day and I can't remember. But I got to know them all somewhat. Dr. Melby, President Johns was the difficult one. And he insisted that we keep our offices open on Saturdays. We always had our office open on Saturday, but it was during the years when establishments were closing on Saturdays. But he insisted that we keep ours open on Saturday for everyone who dropped in. And I didn't get to know him too well, but I knew he was not liked by too many people. In later years, I got to know President Bowers quite well. I'm very, very fond of him. He seemed to care for people and for everything that went on. And I was given an award, an alumni award, and he came in to tell me about it and was very friendly and gracious. And it meant a lot to me that he would do that. And then President Dennison, who is now president, was a student here when I was working here. And I met him one day and I told him that I knew him when he was a student here, but I knew of him because he was an excellent student. In keeping records in the registrar's office, there would be some people that we would single out above others because we would see their records. And that's the reason I remember him. But I also remembered what he looked like, because when I saw his picture, I recognized him just as an older version of the college student that I knew. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was very interesting when he came back here to work. And President McCain during the war years, he was a wonderful man. Do you want to know the little incident that makes me remember him, which is different? We had streetcars in town at the time, and I always walked to work. I lived about 9-10 blocks from the university. This particular morning, the bus or the streetcar. The man had had cancer surgery, so he had a tube in his throat. And he only had one passenger on the bus. It was a bus. Yes, because streetcars went out when I was going to school. It was on the bus. He stopped the bus and motioned for me to step in the bus. And I just shook my head no, because I was in the habit of walking all the time. And it just stopped it and asked me to come in and ride, because he would see me every morning. So I finally did get in the bus, and the buses came around in front of Main Hall. There was an oval there, and the bus stopped right in front of Main Hall. This man who was in the bus got off there. The man was President McCain, and he introduced himself to me, and I was never so embarrassed in my life. And he said, "I have seen it all." He said, "I just came from a part of the country where the bus drivers went like this and pushed everyone away from the bus because they were overcrowded. And here I come to a place where the bus driver stops and begs a passenger to get into the bus and ride the rest of the way." He said, "This I will never forget." And you know that every time we were at a function where I happened to be and the president was there, he would recite this little story, but he made it very dramatic and cute, because he would expand it just a little bit in showing how the bus driver put both feet on the brake and got the bus to stop with a screech, and then he practically went out and got her and put her in the bus to ride the rest of the way. So that's my first memory of President McCain. He was a wonderful, wonderful, very well liked by everyone, and everyone was sorry to see him. But there are no other incidences like that of the presidents that I can remember.
But and then you were also here when Bob Panzer was here.
Oh yes, I knew Bob as a student.
Did you really?
Yes, oh yes. And I was working here when Bob was a student. Yes, and I knew Bob Panzer. Yes, I have seen him since he has come back. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was also. We've had some wonderful men as presidents, and as in any other place, a president cannot please everyone. So you will hear from those who don't, who didn't like some of them and who were happy to see them go. But as far as working here at the university under any of those presidents, I can't say that anything, I can't complain about a thing regarding any of the presidents. Mm-hmm.
What were some of the changes that you noticed throughout the years with the students that you worked with?
The changes in the students. Well, I think in the early years, students were more prone to take orders and suggestions from their superiors, whereas they became rebellious in the 60s. That was the Vietnam era. And it was unfortunate that they became that way, because they are no longer that way now. They were a little difficult to handle because they didn't want rules and regulations. They wanted their independence. I think that's the difference. And I was advisor to Angel Flight, which was a girls' auxiliary to the Air Force, ROTC. It was a group of hand-picked girls who performed drills. I was their advisor during the entire time of their existence on the campus. And in the first years that I accompanied them, they went out of town, and especially to Spokane to perform during Armed Forces Days. I was their chaperone and their other mother. In the first years that I went with them, we stayed in a hotel there that set aside a certain number of rooms for the girls. I had to check every one of the girls in every night to be sure that they were all there, and because the next morning they had to get up and perform and march down the streets. And then during the latter years, nobody reported to me. I went with them, but worried about them. But they just took off and went any place they wanted to go. And then the next morning, when they were supposed to be at a certain place, they were all supposed to be at a certain place. So I didn't worry about them. I worried just the same, but I wasn't supposed to worry about them. So you see, it was entirely different. The young people became independent and self-sufficient and didn't need chaperones anymore. There was no such thing. And see, that was hard for someone who grew up in the years when you had a chaperone for everything, and when you had to go around and make a bed check every night. Mm-hmm.
Probably brought back some memories.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Family.
Yes. Oh yes.
Okay. What would you say is your greatest accomplishment during your years at the university? Certainly that can be plural.
Well, I think helping the veterans when they came back after the war, they were the ones who needed help more than anyone. And I think I gave them personal help. I was understanding and patient with them, helped them get enrolled in school and get their money that was due them every month, and saw to it that everything was in order. And then I think during years in the registrar's office, I had many, many students who would come to ask for help regarding their courses and their goals. And then I think I've helped quite a few since I have retired. I have helped some of the older non-traditional students who have come back and who have sought help from me. And I have felt very good about that. I think the attention I have paid students, I hope that I never once said I was too busy to see one. I don't think I ever did. I think that whenever a student came to the office and needed to see me, that I would. And I was never a clock watcher. I never was one who came to work from 8 to 5. I was always here early and stayed as late as I had. I was the registrar 1 year without an assistant. we were in transition from one person to another. And those years, I was at the office 7 days a week. That year, I was at the office 7 days a week. I really worked hard. But the university has been my life. It has meant everything to me. I have enjoyed all the people I have met and contacts with the young people, especially.
Wonderful years.
Wonderful years, yes. I was advisor to Mortarboard for many years as well, and they gave me lots of little honors and awards. I received a lot of plaques and things, and all of that has meant a lot to me. And the working with Angel Flight was very rewarding because we were working with very fine young people.
Mm-hmm. What did you like best about the university? And some of these are similar questions,
yes,
and things that you shared that I want to give you the opportunity to expand.
Well, the university has made me what I am because, excuse me, I came here as a small town girl from a very small high school who had not been out in the world at all. I was not quite 18 years old and didn't know what to expect at a university. So it taught me everything from the ground up. And then I learned to get along with people. I learned to become independent. And of course, the extracurricular activities that I had during my working years were very important to me because it brought me in close contact with students. And they're my favorites. They still are. I still have someone come to my house to ask for academic advising.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still do.
The guy came to you one time.
Did you?
If you were to relive any of those years or do anything differently during those years, what would it be?
Some of those years were difficult years, but I don't know that. I thought of that some time back. I was wondering what I would do differently. I don't think I would do anything differently because I think I learned with every step that I took. I wanted to teach school, always did want to teach school, and I was glad that I had the opportunity to teach at the university because those were wonderful experiences. But everything that I did after that, I felt was a wonderful experience. I don't know that I would change anything. I am concerned about people today who are always asking for raises. And I'm one who knows what it's like to work for a very, very low salary, and know what it's like to work for a couple of years in a row without a nickel of raise, and know what it's like to work as a woman who received smaller raises than a man in the same position. That occurred very definitely, but never once did I complain because I was happy with what I was doing. I have been very happy working at everything I have done here. I have not been an unhappy person. I have enjoyed everything at the university. I have too much to do sometimes, but who doesn't? And now I'm enjoying life thoroughly.
Yeah. What are you doing during your retirement?
Thoroughly. Well, I seem to be busy all the time. Unfortunately, I have friends who are not well, so I try to bolster their spirits as often as I can. And one thing that I am doing now, which sounds trivial, I am taking music lessons. It was one thing I couldn't do when I was very young. We were very poor. Our family was very poor. We had no money. And I have bought myself an electronic organ. And I take lessons on a regular basis and enjoy every minute of it, because I have to keep my mind moving. I have to learn something new every day in order to postpone Alzheimer's. When a person gets to be my age, that person has to keep their mind working. I read what I feel like reading, and I am physically active because I have a large yard and a home, which I take care of alone, and then I walk a lot. So I try to keep as physically active and as mentally active as I can. I want to be around when the year 2000 comes. I want to see the year 2000, and I will be happy.
Why the year 2000?
You
just want to see the...
I just want to see the beginning of another century. Uh-huh. Because my parents were born in the 1800s and my mother saw 1900, and so I want to see the year 2000. That's all. And if I keep the mental attitude that I have, if I keep physically active, and I don't become ill, as some of my friends have, I see no reason I shouldn't, but if my mind doesn't keep alert, then I don't want to go back. I have some very lovely friends who are ill, and I feel very sorry for them because life has no quality for them. Mm-hmm. But when you get to be 80, you can expect it.
Is there anything else that you want to share about your time at the university? Any other memories or incidents that come to mind?
I've got the time.
It would be too long. No, I think this is a wonderful institution. And the wonderful things that I could say about it, when I was advising mortarboard, naturally I saw some of the best students on campus, and some of them would go on to graduate school and would feel very nervous about it. But the wonderful part of all of that was that they would come back and say, I have had as good an education in my undergraduate years as anyone else who attended the graduate classes that I did. In fact, one girl said that she had her degree in English and she went to Northwestern, and she said, I had a much better background in my English classes than those who were in class with me. And I said, that's one of the things that I try to tell the students, that you can get as good an education as this at this university as you can at any other university in the country. It's up to you. Mm-hmm. And several of them came back to tell me that they had a very good background for their graduate work elsewhere. So I still tell parents that they can send their children here for their undergraduate degrees and let them go elsewhere, graduate degrees. Mm-hmm. We do have some very, very good faculty members.
Mm-hmm. Unless you can think of something else?
Yeah, very good.